preserve your right to speak or something like that? I would have been there, right to protest rally. It's got a picture of a big mouth and a megaphone on the script, and megaphones I don't like because they produce generally bad sound, and as a recordist, I don't like megaphones. I like sound systems, and there'll be a pretty good one over at the Champaign County Courthouse Pavilion at 2 o'clock today. There's a campus rally yesterday, a community rally. I was over, of course, recording the Friday Forum, or I would have been at the Right to Protest rally. Tara Huska, I've got a segment or two from the Q&A, including one of my interventions. I guess I'm the host, so I get to do that, maybe. It's the last one of the series. It's been quite a good series. And she's with the Xinyu Collective. She spent 3 years at the Standing Rock site. I didn't really know it went that long, but I guess it did. Land back is one of the questions, a program that I don't know about, though actually the Potawatomi have gotten some land back here in Illinois. And I heard a bizarre story about the Kickapoo. One of the places they relocated to was on the U.S.-Mexico border, one of the crossing sites, one of the ones that was sort of very relaxed for many, many years. The Guadalupe-Hidalgo Treaty, of course, calls for free transport across the border. Another broken tale of broken treaties, I guess. That's the one with the U.S. signed with Mexico. A lot of backstory there. Abraham Lincoln was against the U.S.-Mexico War, surprisingly. I think he lost his election at one point because of that. But backstory, backstory, backstory. Let's get to the front story. And I guess what I'll do, since I just saw it, that Mumia Abu-Jamal dropped a short commentary. I'll play that and then do the storyboard. The rally was one of this series of Down with the Oligarchs that Octavia Cortez and Bernie Sanders have been doing. It's quite spirited. Runs long. I might have to excerpt a little bit of it. You can find that at Flashpoints from the Monday edition. They dedicated the whole hour to it, so I won't be able to do that, obviously, since I've got an Amy Goodman commentary here. But here's Mumia Abu-Jamal talking about a German actor who I have no idea who he is.
Rolf Becker, congratulations. For the German actor and human rights activist, Rolf Becker, this has been a good year indeed. First, he has marked a birthday, his 90th. Secondly, he was just been awarded the first Rosa Luxemburg Prize, named for the brilliant German socialist leader. Rolf Becker has been a human rights activist for over 50 years. I met him when I was on death row in Dean County in Waynesburg, Pennsylvania. That was over 25 years ago. To Rolf Becker, congratulations, brother. With love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Okay. I guess I'll have to look up his films. I'm not a filmic guy. Maybe there'll be some discussion of film and radio free labor. Gus is off busy again. He's such a busy weekend fellow. But I guess Stephanie and Bob will be holding it down for like 2 hours after this show. As I mentioned, the 2 o'clock rally on the Champaign Courthouse. Don't have the convening people, but I think Party for Socialism and Liberation is one of them. Something else going on around town is, I guess there's a screening of another film about Israel-Palestine called The Teacher, and it opened Thursday. And it's one at the Megaplexes, and I don't have that information in front of me. Oscar nominated. Amy had the story, this very sad story of a photojournalist who had just been memorialized in a film and had been accepted at Cannes in then her whole family was wiped out by what looks like a very targeted attack, which wouldn't be surprising since the fellow that won the Oscar for No Other Land, along with his Israeli co-director, was attacked in the West Bank, and it looked like it was targeted by the settlers and the military both, which are working in unison. Let's do an underwriting announcement here since I'm looking at it and I might forget. Then we'll get to Amy Goodman's commentary, and I'll be trying to figure out what to leave off of AOC's talk, probably just the very beginning of it.
Programming is brought to you in part by the listeners of WEFT and SunPower by Legacy Solar. Based in Towanda, Illinois, a proud supporter of WEFT, SunPower by Legacy Solar provides services throughout the state of Illinois, specializing in residential and commercial solar power installations. Learn more at LegacySolarPower.com or by following their Facebook page, SunPower by Legacy Solar.
Co-presidents Trump and Musk attack Social Security. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. April 15th is tax day in the United States, when most of us, the wealthiest excepted, pay our share of taxes to fund the government. This includes three key pillars of the social safety net: Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. These three, like almost every federal government department, are being gutted by President Trump and his main funder, a man often called the co-president, billionaire Elon Musk, and his so-called Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. For generations, politicians couldn't touch Social Security. The immensely popular program was a third rail of politics, that electrified rail that powers subway lines potentially fatal if touched. Now, as Trump approaches his 100th day of his second term, it appears even Social Security is being targeted. April 15th, in addition to being tax day, was also the hands-off Social Security National Day of Action, convened by the advocacy group Social Security Works. Participants organized rallies across the nation with signs like "Protect, Defend, Expand Social Security" and "Social Security Works, Billionaires Don't." These protests are part of the rapidly growing grassroots movement to block the Trump-Musk attack on government and against draconian deportations.
Donald Trump has a problem.
Nancy Altman, president of Social Security Works, said on the Democracy Now! NewsHour before heading off to a protest.
He ran around the country flooding the swing states, saying he would not cut Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. But in his first term, he proposed cuts to those programs every single year. Now, those cuts didn't go through. So what's he doing now? He's claiming that there's enormous amount of fraud, which is a lie. There's vanishingly small amounts of fraud. So when he cuts your benefits, he'll be saying he's cutting fraud. He's not cutting the benefits that you have earned.
This strategy has been most clearly expressed by Trump's Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, another billionaire, who said in a recent interview,
"Let's say Social Security didn't send out their checks this month. My mother-in-law, who's 94, she wouldn't call and complain. She just wouldn't. She'd think something got messed up, and she'll get it next month. A fraudster always makes the loudest noise, screaming, yelling, and complaining."
Obviously, there are very few mothers-in-law of billionaires among Social Security's beneficiaries. According to Social Security Works, around half of all seniors rely on Social Security for most of their income, while 25% of seniors rely on it for virtually all of their income. The average annual payout to these seniors is just $20,000.
Yes, it's really hard to imagine what they have in mind, what their end game is, other than destroying our Social Security system.
Social Security Works Altman added,
"There are over 70 million Americans who receive monthly benefits that they have earned. They tend to be, they are seniors, people with disabilities, the nation's largest children's program. Many of them have mobility issues."
In an explosive expose, the New York Times recently reported 6,300 immigrants who had legally received Social Security numbers had been transferred to the agency's death master file to declare these living, working, taxpaying people as dead. The Times reports, quote, "The goal is to cut those people off from using crucial financial services like bank accounts and credit cards, along with their access to government benefits," unquote, to encourage them to self-deport. Social Security was signed into law by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt 90 years ago on August 14, 1935. The program was championed by Secretary of Labor Frances Perkins, the first woman cabinet member in U.S. history. The sweeping law provided not only Social Security's pension for seniors, but also unemployment insurance when unemployment amidst the Great Depression was over 20%, as well as financial assistance to mothers and children in need, to the blind and to those with disabilities. Frances Perkins was a consummately savvy politician and a brilliant public communicator. In a January 1935 op-ed in the New York Times, she wrote, quote, "It's only beginning to be recognized in the United States that social insurance is a fundamental part of another great forward step in that liberation of humanity which began with the Renaissance. The worldwide move towards Social Security marks another great step along the road of that development we call civilization," unquote. Republican politicians know that to promote the elimination or even the privatization of Social Security is political suicide. Instead, the DOGE plan seems to be to render it dysfunctional by shuttering field offices, massively reducing its workforce, thus abandoning the most vulnerable among us who have the least political influence. This is what Trump and Musk clearly intend. The urgent work now is to stop them. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Hands off Social Security and bring back all of the ravaging of the public health cutbacks. Bring back the funding. I mentioned the film, The Teacher. I think it's at AMC Champagne 13, because there's also a call to show the encampments, what really happened at Columbia University. The encampments broke documentary box office records with its opening weekend. And you can call AMC. I'll give you the number, but I'm sure you can look up AMC 13 Champagne, 217-383-0002. And this is a call by many, but see you, Jews for Ceasefires, one of the groups that's calling for this to be screened in town. I'd like to see it. Okay. Yeah, I guess I'm going to stay with what I was. I thought I'd go right to the L.A. rally with AOC and Sanders, but I guess I will play this bit from the Friday Forum, the last in the series. It'll be on Wednesday in its entirety. Ran a little short, I thought, so maybe I'll have some related programming on. Yeah. Here's a question about land back. The idea of what I understand of it is that tribes are getting some of their minuscule amount of their territory, but some back. And I told that bizarre story about Kickapoo. Eventually, they moved away from this crossing border a little bit because it just got too heated. They were somehow made some other land, and now they've got a casino on it, which is an irony of history. It seems to me that a lot of tribes are gaining from that.
Good job.
Can you tell us about some of the land back programs in Minnesota or other places that you're aware of?
There's a couple of, so people are doing it different ways. There are some efforts that are like this. There's not many that I'm aware of that are specifically more like geared on environmental protection and campaigning and mutual aid kind of community. But there's been a pretty consistent push I've seen across certain states, like in Minnesota, like in Maine, California, and a few others that have been working with, like basically the tribe is working with the state to go from co-management of state forests into actually claiming that land back and giving it back to the tribe altogether, which is like, I think a financial win for the state, right? Because they like don't have to spend the money on that, but it's also like, that's the land back, right? So like that's been like thousands and thousands of acres worth of land reclaimed all over the Turtle Island. The project I can think of that's like closer to what we're doing, there's one actually over in Blackfeet Nation called Pecunny Lodge Institute. They have employed a lot of folks and have harvested a lot of food and fed a lot of people. I've eaten a lot of their food at ceremonies. It's really beautiful to see that and to see folks sharing knowledge, right? Like, I do feel like Indigenous people know something about what it means to live in mutuality, you know? And that's, it seems like more and more people are craving that knowledge.
So the natives, the Greenpeace, who got the slap suit, so outrageous, were entirely right about the dangers. Every now and then you hear about pipeline problems. The Midwest is crisscrossed. I think Illinois is just covered with pipelines. Acetone, gasoline, all the petrochemicals, not carbon dioxide under the aquifer. It's just a very frustrating time because I'm concerned that the damage we're doing to the environment is so great that there's some studies that deglaciation is going to cause earthquakes, promote them, you know, not necessarily cause them. But I think if we had a big one like historically we've had, we talk about the seven generations. If we're looking seven generations back, that's long enough to remember the big one in southern Illinois that affected the whole. It'll be cataclysmic if that goes ahead, and it's very frustrating to me. That I don't know how you want to react to that, but it's maybe some specifics on pipeline actions that you've taken. I know you're not out there now, but I'm sure you track it.
And I'm actually currently named in one of those slap type suits, which really is not a fun one. Mountain Valley Pipeline is suing myself and a bunch of grandmas, college kids, and folks for $4 million apiece for a what they're alleging is a business conspiracy to deprive their company or whatever for protesting, you know, and trying to protect the rivers and the mountains of Appalachia. Yeah, I mean, I think like there's that piece, right? There's the thumb that's always like the foot that's always pushing down and like trying to squash out anyone that would dare stand against. And there are, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of miles of pipelines crisscrossing Turtle Island. Half of them are corroding into the ground and they're leaking. I mean, anytime I hear a pipeline company use the argument of, well, we need to put in a new one because the old one is leaking. And I'm like, well, the new one's going to start leaking then too. Like, you're not seeming to understand what the issue is. It's not a good idea to put a new pipeline through 800 wetlands in the headwaters of the Mississippi River so it can start leaking there. You know, like, that's not the solution to the old leaking pipeline. The solution is decommission it, pull it out of the ground and clean it up, and, you know, stop expanding fossil fuels. Like, that's the solution, right? Like, there's more pulled out that if it was all burned, that would be the end of us, right? Like, currently sitting in vats all over, you know, Canada and the rest of, like, the world when it comes to oil reserves. I think, like, for the tipping points part, like, I don't know how many people in this room are doing climate science or environmental science or something like that. Anyone? Okay. Well, if you were, it is a very rough scene. Climate science is, it can be really heart-rending, right? Like, it's depressing to know the truth of climate science. And, like, the little memes that we share of, like, the world is on fire, yeah, I mean, that, like, is something, right? But it almost makes the problem feel like too great to do anything about, and I feel like that's actually disempowering in some ways. Like, I'm guilty of sharing those memes too, especially when I see like celebrities in space. Like, I'm just like, what are we doing? Are you serious? But at the same time, like, I would say with the teachings I've been given for the seventh generation and like where we sit as people, we have been wiped out before and we have lost before, you know, and that doesn't change what I believe to be an obligation to be the best version of yourself that you can be while you're here in the time that you have, because our lives are so finite. And when you're handed like a giant, massive problem of like, oh, the world is on fire, yeah, as that little tiny finite being, maybe you can't stop that fire individually. But that doesn't mean that you can't contribute to a greater whole that's trying to push for something different. I mean, I couldn't imagine sitting back and looking at my kid, you know, now I have a child, right? I've always been talking about like the seventh generation all these years, and now I have a child. I just couldn't imagine sitting back and being like, you know, when she asked, like, what did you do? What did you do? And telling her I sat back and I didn't do anything, knowing what was coming. Like, it's not just like personal vindiction of I want to know like that I did the best I could, but it's also like I want to teach her how to be a good human, you know, and a good steward. I don't think the obligation of steward goes away just because the ecosystem is not well. We always have that obligation.
Tara Huska of the Genu Collective. She started 3 years at the Standing Rock demonstration against that pipeline that went ahead and leaked recently again. The Shaboni Lake was given to the Potawatomi, or returned, I guess I should say. It's a state park that they had bought land adjacent to, if I recall correctly. So there is a land back phenomena. I'm also concerned about the big one here in the central of the state, central of the U.S. Because of the brittle nuclear reactors we have in the large part of the grid is supplied by nuclear power in Illinois. And they're talking about making a micro plant right on campus at Abbott, from what I can understand from the artist's rendering. They don't actually say. They're supposed to be modular and it can be moved on a truck or a big vehicle. So why don't they do the research somewhere else and then bring it in if they deem that it's safe, because there is no proven modular microreactor at this point. Perhaps many people don't even know that a deal was signed with NanoNuclear to go ahead with that. All right, going to slew forward in the L.A. rally with AOC and Bernie Sanders. I apologize. You can find it, flashpoints from the Monday edition. I believe even the podcast doesn't have much information about what the episode is. Sometimes they get it up, sometimes they don't. So, again, there's a rally at 2 o'clock. I don't know how the weather will be by then. It's rain on and off. It's mild, though. And the rally, but the CU resistance effort had mounted during the rain was huge. So hopefully something similar can happen today. And they'll have a sound system, not megaphones. I didn't get into who was all the sponsoring. I understand there's a World Without War chapter in town I hadn't heard of before. So maybe that's something people might want to affiliate with.
And an interesting thing that happened was that the day I was named to this committee, the same day, my office's phones rang off the hook and our inboxes were flooded by every corporate lobbyist under the sun. They all wanted to be my best friend. But you know what, Los Angeles? Because of your support, because of you all showing up, because I don't have to take a dime in corporate money, you allow me to say no. But not everyone is so lucky. I have seen firsthand how these groups bully and pressure members of Congress, threatening to either take money away or spend it against them if they don't do what they want. And what they want is for our lives to be as expensive as possible on the lowest possible wage. It all trickles down to how life feels for working people today. These facts of life, the feeling of the water rising up to our throats, the impossibility to afford anything easily, the fear of speaking up, the deeply bitter and toxic division driven more by algorithms on social media than individual thought, the crumbling of our rights and protections. Understand that all of this is what it means and what it feels like to be governed by billionaires. This is what oligarchy feels like, and it only will get worse until we act. It is this system that relies on division to legislate greed that has brought us the most corrupt administration in American history and the Republican majorities to support it. Big money is how we got Donald Trump. And his whole presidency began with launching tools for bribery, meme coins to fleece working people and move around money in the dark, extortion settlements from media companies and law firms who gladly pay them. The removal of duly elected officials on Inauguration Day, Donald Trump removed duly elected officials from the chamber in order to make space for who's really in charge behind, the really in charge, who were the billionaires who sat behind him. They have one central economic mission, to make billionaires richer at the expense of the United States of America. And it does not surprise us that their first economic mission has been to target Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security, to fire our federal workers and fleece and abandon our veterans so that they can hand that money off to the billionaires who are backing them. But this isn't just about the Republican attacks on working people, LA. We need a Democratic Party that fights harder for us, too. And that means, our communities, all of us coming together, choosing and voting for Democrats and elected officials who know how to stand for the working class. And LA, I want to thank you for working very hard and doing your best to try to make that happen. In fact, last month, when other Democrats caved, your senators, Alex Padilla and Adam Schiff, stood strong against the DC pressure and voted against the Republican spending bill to cut billions for working people. In fact, all of your Democratic members of Congress and all of your members here today voted against that bill too. Defend them, LA, and don't stop there. I want you to look at every level of office around and support Democrats who actually fight, because those are the ones who can actually defeat Republicans. So folks, you know what that means. We have to start working now to give David Baladeo, Young Kim, and Ken Calvert the boot and replace them with a brawling Democrat who will stand for the working people of California. But beyond elections, LA, our task is to build community. Block associations, volunteer groups, church organizations, PTAs, activist organizations, because community is the most powerful building block we have to defeat authoritarianism and root out corruption. This is the path to guaranteeing health care to every American, to establish a living minimum wage, to take on skyrocketing rents and mortgages, to tackle the climate crisis, and establish a country where the American dream is actually possible for all of us. I come from a working class family. My mom cleaned houses, my dad worked to start a small business, and they worked so hard just to make life possible a little bit better for my brother and I. And when I was a teenager, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. He passed away before I was even 20 years old. And the rug was pulled out from us, all in the middle of the 2008 recession. So many of us live like this. One accident, one bad day, one piece of bad news away from our lives falling apart. We don't have to live like this anymore, Los Angeles. We can stand with one another and stand for ourselves. And we might come from different places, but we share the same experiences. So to all who came here today unsure of whether this is where you belong, I want to say that you do. No matter if you have all the right words to say, no matter your race, religion, gender identity, or status, no matter if you disagree with me on some things, but if you are willing to fight for someone that you don't know, you are welcome here. If you are willing to fight for working people regardless of who they are, how they identify, you are welcome here. Because here, everyone is valued. But we have to stand together. We cannot be tempted to turn in our neighbors or be fooled into thinking that we are really that much different from a trans kid who wants to get accepted by their friends. That we're that different from a dreamer who worked to go to college and try to provide for their family. That we're that different from anyone who's not like us. Hate is a trap that sinks us all. And it is standing together without exception to reject division. That is the only way we can win. It's the only way we can win. So I hope you see that this movement is not about partisan labels or purity tests, but it's about class solidarity. It is about the thousands of you who came out here today to stand together and say our lives deserve dignity and our work deserves respect. No matter who we are here to make a sacred promise to each other. And our goal today is to commit to building the kind of country we all deserve. And we will make that promise to take care of each other on our worst days and to share in the successes of our best. Thank you so much, Los Angeles. And it is my honor here today to introduce someone who has dedicated his life to bringing us together. So let's get loud. And let's be grateful, because Senator Bernie Sanders is in the building. Come on down, Bernie.
And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We are broadcasting a speech that AOC and Bernie Sanders gave yesterday in Los Angeles to almost 40,000 people. It was amazing, and it continues now with Bernie.
There are people a half a mile away. Let me... Nope. It's not Bernie, it is you. Let me thank our brothers and sisters in the trade union movement for being here. Let me thank Unite Here, LIUNA Local 724, ILWU, the Longshoremen, CNA Nurses, NNN Nurses, NUHW Kaiser Nurses, UTLA, UAW, California Labor Federation, AFL-CIO. And today we pledge with our brothers and sisters in the trade union movement, we are going to grow the movement. Millions of workers want to join unions because they know they're going to get better wages, better benefits, better working conditions. Let's do it. And I want to thank the musicians who have been with us today. So great. Gray's Gospel Choir, thank you. The Red Pears, Jeff Rosenstock, Indigo D'Souza, Dirty Projectors, Joan Baez, Maggie Rogers, Neil Young. And you know why we had all of these great musicians here today? It's not just to entertain you. It's more than that. We're going to make our revolution with joy. We're going to sing and dance our way to victory against hatred and divisiveness. So I want to thank all of the musicians who have been with us. And I want to thank the political leaders who have been here, Roe and Pramila and Jimmy. Thank you. And mostly, I want to thank all of you. And I want to tell you something. You are making Donald Trump... All right, we need a medic. Medic. Okay? Okay. Your presence here today... And by the way, there are some 36,000 of you... The largest rally that we have ever had. And your presence here today is making Donald Trump and Elon Musk very nervous. Last time we did a rally in Denver, a little bit smaller than this. Thank you, LA. Elon Musk announced that everybody at the rally, or most of the people, were paid organizers. Anybody here get paid to come today? And Donald Trump, very envious of sizes, he said, well, Bernie has rallies of 2,000 or 3,000 people, can't compete with Trump. He lied. So I invite the president to come to LA. Tell the people here why you think it's a great idea to cut Medicaid and nutrition and health care so you can give tax breaks to billionaires. The people of LA would love to hear that. So why are we here in LA today? And the answer is obvious. We are living in a moment of extraordinary danger. And how we respond to this moment will not only impact our lives, but will impact the lives of our kids and future generations, and in terms of the climate, it will depend, we can depend on whether or not the planet Earth survives. That's why we're here today. We're living at a moment where a handful of billionaires control the economic and political life of our country. We're living in a moment with a president who has no understanding or respect for the Constitution of the United States. And let us make no doubt about it, moving us rapidly toward an authoritarian form of society. And Mr. Trump, we ain't going there. We are living in a moment where the Republican Party has, to a large degree, become a cult of the individual, obeying Trump's every wish. And at a time of massive income and wealth inequality, right now, as we speak, they are plotting about how they can give $1.1 trillion in tax breaks to the 1% and devastate programs that working families need. You know, it's funny. Just yesterday, our good friend Elon Musk, Mr. Musk sent out a tweet. And in essence, he said, you know, Bernie Sanders has been talking about the growth of oligarchy year after year after year. Well, Elon, you're damn right. That's what I've been talking about. The difference is, I'm no longer talking about how we're moving to oligarchy. I'm talking about how we are living today in an oligarchic form of society. 3 months ago, when Trump was inaugurated, standing right behind him during his inauguration were the three wealthiest people in this country, Mr. Musk, Mr. Bezos, and Mr. Zuckerberg. And right behind them were 13 other billionaires who Trump had nominated to head up major federal agencies. And that, brothers and sisters, is what oligarchy is all about. You know, lately, given what's happening in America, I've been remembering the history lessons that I learned when I was in the sixth grade. And I remember, and I think many of you will recall, when you think about your education, you'll remember hearing about Abraham Lincoln on the fields of Gettysburg in 1863. And that was just a few days after 20,000 Union soldiers had either died or been wounded fighting against the nightmare of slavery. And Lincoln looked out on that field, and this is what he said, and you all remember it. He said, quote, we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. And that is precisely why we are here today, to make sure that government of, by, and for the people does not perish, and that we do not become a government of the billionaire class, by the billionaire class, and for the billionaire class. The American people do not want the richest guy on earth running all over Washington, D.C., decimating the Social Security Administration, making it harder. It's the richest guy on earth, making it harder for old people with disabilities to get the benefits that they paid into. Proposing to lay off 83,000 workers at the Veterans Administration. Denying the health care that the men and women who put their lives on the line to defend us deserve. Slashing the Department of Education. Decimating USAID, which, by the way, means that hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of the most desperate people in this world will die as a result. And when we talk about oligarchy, it is not just economics. I trust that all of you know that you are living under a corrupt campaign finance system which allows billionaires to buy elections. Don't tell me about democracy when Musk himself can put $270 million to elect Donald Trump and then get rewarded with the most important position in government. But it's not just Musk and Republicans, it's the Democratic Party as well. Their billionaires tell candidates, don't stand up to the powerful special interests, and too many Democrats are listening to them. And that is why, if we want to preserve democracy in America, we've got to overturn this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision. And we've got to move to public funding of elections. In America, one person, one vote, not billionaires buying elections. Let me tell you something about the oligarchs. They are very, very religious people. But their religion is not based on doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. Their religion is not based on love or justice. Their religion is based on greed, greed, and more greed. All over this country, in Vermont, California, all over this country, we have a serious problem with drug addiction, with alcoholism, with other forms of addiction. But in my honest opinion, the most serious addiction crisis we face is the addiction of the oligarchy toward greed. They got billions and billions of dollars. It's not enough. They need more. And if they have to step on the poor and the disabled and working class people, that is what they will do unless we stop them, and we will stop them. But it's not just oligarchy we are fighting. We're fighting, okay, EMT. Raise your hand where the problem is. Okay, can we get somebody there? We got it, somebody? Okay, thank you. But it's not just oligarchy we are fighting. We're fighting a president who undermines our Constitution every day and threatens our freedom of speech and assembly, and whose agents are rounding up innocent people off the streets, putting them in unmarked vans, and throwing them in detention centers. That is what happens in dictatorships, not democracies. And we're going to stop that outrageous action on the part of the president. You know, our founding fathers of this country were no dummies. They wrote a constitution and established a form of government with a separation of powers. Remember we're reading all about that? You got a legislative body, Congress. You got an executive branch, president. You got a judiciary, the federal courts. And they wrote that document because they had just fought a brutal war against the autocratic King of England. And what they understood as they were forming this new country, that they never wanted to see a nation where one person had unlimited power. Well, Trump wants that power. We are not giving it to him. Trump is suing the media because they say bad things about him. Oh, how horrible is that? He has sued ABC, CBS, Meta, the Des Moines Register. His FCC is investigating NPR and PBS. He loves the media when they fawn over him, but he can't take criticism. This from a guy who has made vulgar comments about his opponents. Hey, Mr. President, if you can't take criticism, get out of politics. That's what democracy is about. Trump is going after the powers of Congress. He is illegally abolishing agencies that Congress created. He's withholding funding that Congress has appropriated. He is establishing tariffs that he has no legal right to do. But it's not just the media and Congress that he's trying to intimidate. In an absolutely outrageous and unconstitutional way, he is going after the judiciary. His view is if a decision comes down from a judge that you don't like, you try to get rid of that judge and impeach him or her. He is going after law firms that have opposed him and his interest in the past, and disgracefully, a number of these law firms have caved in. He is going after universities. You know, the function of a university, school of higher education, is to pursue the truth, not to cave in to an authoritarian president to protect the federal grants they get. But it is not just Trump's and his administration's domestic policy that we should be concerned about. For the first time in our 250-year history, we have a president who is aligning himself with dictatorship abroad. No, Mr. Trump, Ukraine did not start that war. Putin and Russia did. We must lead the world in supporting democracies, not supporting Putin and dictatorships. Well, let me tell you something else. Trump wants over $8 billion more dollars to go to Netanyahu's war machine. Israel has a right to defend itself against terrorism, but it does not have a right to go to war against the entire Palestinian people. It does not have the right to kill 50,000 people, injure over 100,000, and destroy the entire infrastructure. And as bad as that is, Trump wants to expel the 2.2 million people in Gaza in order to create a playground for his billionaire friends. That is beyond insane, and we will never, never let that happen. Brothers and sisters, not just oligarchy and authoritarianism. Our job right now, at a time when the very richest people in America are becoming phenomenally richer, our job is to create an economy that works for all of us, not just the people on top. All right, I'm going to do something radical here. You ready? I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to talk about what's really going on in America today, and that is we are living with two Americas. One America, the people on top, have never, ever in the history of our country had it so good. Today, we have more income and wealth inequality than we have ever had. The three wealthiest people own more wealth than the bottom half of American society, 170 million people. The top 1% owns more wealth than the bottom 90%, and the CEOs of major corporations now earn 300 times what their workers are making. Is there a medical issue? All right, we need an EMT there. Raise your hand, guys.
As long as they don't come for him. This is the LA rally from last weekend.
Income and wealth inequality. We have more concentration of ownership today than we have ever had. We have a handful of corporations owning sector and sector of our economy. So that is one America. People on top doing phenomenally well. Let me tell you about the other America that you know very, very well. And that is that 60% of our people are living paycheck to paycheck. Anybody here living paycheck to paycheck? All right, I grew up, like Donald Trump, I grew up in a family that lived paycheck to paycheck, so I know a little bit about that. And the result of living paycheck to paycheck is such, if you can believe it, that working class people in America die 7 years earlier than the rich. All right, I'm going to ask you a question. Why is that? All right, you got it. The answer is stress. If you got to worry every single day how you're going to feed your kids, how you're going to pay the rent, how you're going to make sure that your car doesn't break down so you can get to work, how you're going to afford to provide for your kid when your kid gets sick and needs to go to a doctor, how you have to work when your schedule is changed every day and you have a boss who doesn't care about you. When you live under those conditions day after day, year after year, it eats away at your body, it eats away in your mind. We need to create an economy where all of our people can live out their life expectancy in the way that they should. And you know why people all over this country are angry? In fact, some of them end up voting for Trump. Let me tell you. And you know why people all over this country are angry? In fact, some of them end up voting for Trump. Let me tell you something you don't hear much about in the corporate media or in the halls of Congress. Today, if you can believe it, despite a huge increase in worker productivity, real inflation accounted for wages are lower today than they were 52 years ago. So workers are producing more and more, but all of what they produce, all of the benefits are going to the top 1%. And during that same period, we have seen a $75 trillion transfer of wealth from the bottom 90% to the top 1%. Today in America, half of older workers have nothing in the bank as they face retirement. And 22% of our seniors are living on $15,000 a year or less. And 800,000 Americans are sleeping out on the streets. Today, as I look at this great crowd, I remember another rally that I attended. I wasn't up here, I was way, way back. And that was in 1963. I was in Washington for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s great I Have a Dream speech. And the truth is, while many, many problems remain, we should be proud that we have made significant progress in fighting racism. And I can remember several decades ago that in the United States Senate, there were all of 2 women, virtually no women governors, no, very few women in the House. Hundreds of women died every year because they could not access legal abortions. I can remember growing up when young people who were gay were ashamed to acknowledge that and suffered in their silence. And nobody back then would have dreamed that we would achieve gay marriage in many states in this country. So my point is that we have made and should be proud of the fact that we have made progress in a number of enormously important areas. But we should also be conscious that in perhaps the most important issue, the economic struggle that so many Americans are now engaged in, we have lost ground. Back in 1944, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, one of the great presidents in the history of our country, he gave a State of the Union address. And this is what he said back in 1944. He said, you know what? We are a great country. We have a great constitution. We have freedom of speech, freedom of religion, etc. But what we need to add to that is to understand that economic rights are human rights. That if you can't afford to go to a doctor, it doesn't really matter about voting. If you can't afford to feed your kids, freedom of assembly doesn't matter that much. He said economic rights are human rights. So today, in the year 2025, we have got to pick up that banner. Economic rights are human rights. Every single person is entitled to that. And this gets to a very fundamental issue. Musk and his friends see you as nothing more than workers to be disposed of. They got rid of tens of thousands of federal workers. And when information, artificial information, and robotics comes, they're going to throw you out on the street as well. They don't give a damn about you. They don't give a damn about your kids. And what we have got to do is say, sorry, we are human beings. And we are entitled. We are entitled to certain fundamental economic rights. So no, we are not going to give more tax breaks to billionaires. We're going to demand that they start paying their fair share of taxes. No, we're not going to keep a federal minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. We're going to raise that wage to a living wage. No worker in America should live in poverty. End of discussion. And we're going to pass the PRO Act to make sure that employers cannot act illegally when workers are trying to form unions. We're going to grow the trade union movement. In America, we're not going to turn our backs on our parents and grandparents who helped build this country. We're not going to cut Social Security. We're going to expand Social Security benefits. And by the way, we're going to reestablish defined benefit pensions for workers in this America. Instead of making massive cuts to Medicaid, we must do what every other major country on earth does. It ain't radical. Healthcare is a human right. We're going to guarantee healthcare to all. Through a Medicare for all single-payer system. The function of healthcare is not to make the insurance companies and the drug companies rich. And we're going to stop paying 10 times more for some prescription drugs than the people of other countries. We can lower prescription drugs by 50%. Here in LA, in Burlington, Vermont, and all across this country, we have a major housing crisis. Am I right? And it's not just homelessness. It's people paying 40, 50, 60% of their limited incomes in housing. Instead of spending $1 trillion a year on the military, let's build 5 million units of low-income and affordable housing. Look, I don't have to tell anyone here that this is a difficult moment in the modern history of our country. We've never gone through anything like this. But this is what I do want to say. Despair is not an option. Giving up and hiding under the covers is not acceptable. The oligarchy will concede nothing. They have the wealth. They have the power. They own Congress. They own the White House. They own much of the media. But they don't own us. Now, I'm not going to tell you that it's going to be easy. It's not. We're going to have to fight them door to door, workplace to workplace, school to school. We're going to have to educate. We're going to have to mobilize. We're going to have to stand up in a dozen different ways. But from the bottom of my heart, and I've been to every state of this country, I don't care whether you're Republican, Democrat, or independent, the people of this country do not want oligarchy. They do not want authoritarianism, and they want a government that works for all of us, not just the 1%. Thank you all very much.
So that's from Flashpoints on Monday. It's the Sunday night rally, AOC and Sanders, 40,000 people. Might have been really hot because people were passing out. You heard all those medical alerts going on from the stage. Thanks for listening. Thanks again. There's a 2 o'clock demonstration on the Champaign Courthouse Pavilion on Main Street. Bring appropriate rain gear since there's another wave of rain coming in. And don't worry about lightning. Come on. There's a tower right there. Somebody was lampooning for people going out in the inclement weather because they might get struck by lightning. It's not like you're out on the middle of a golf course with a metal rod in your hand. Okay, opinions are those of the speakers, not necessarily shared by others at the station. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting community media. Power to the tower. Remember, we're still raising some money for some much-needed improvements, some that have been done and some that are still to be done.
Programming on WEFT is brought to you in part by the Canopy Club, hosting live music and events, including the Piano Man every Monday night. The Canopy Club has welcomed national and regional artists, rock, indie, hip-hop, electronic, and all genres for over 25 years. Find information on upcoming events at canopyclub.com or by following the Canopy Club on all social media platforms.